In the last 15 years, there's only two people of 70 kilos and more who finished on the podium of Liège-Bastogne-Liège.
In the last how many years?
The last 15 years.
Two people. Who was the other one?
Mathieu van der Poel and Wout van Aert.
Wout van Aert.
And another interesting stat.
I finished on the podium, and I was I weighed that much.
Yeah, but that's more than 15 years ago.
I know, but I just come on, man.
That's how old we are.
Look, I didn't get hugged enough when I grew up. Come on, man. Just give me some love, dude. Yeah. Hey, everybody. This is the Move Podcast. Hope everybody's doing well. Talking about the 2024 Liège-Bastogne-Liège. It is exactly the way it sounds. It starts and finishes in Liège. It goes down to Bastogne, Belgium. I want to ask Johan some questions about this part of Belgium here in a little bit. And then comes back to Liège. Of course, goes down in a fairly straight shot. And then on their way back, they find pretty much any hill they can go over, any climb they can go over. For the betting man, would you just tell me, Johan, Tadej Pogačar has raced 10 times this year, 10 days. This is his seventh win. 70% of the time he's put a number on his back, he's won the bike race. It's crazy.
I mean, you know, the top guys seem to race less and less, but whenever they race, there's no more racing for training these days. Yeah, 7 out of 10. I think that's quite unique.
And I got a little ahead of myself, obviously joined by Johan Bruneel, up there still in that wine cellar, man. I want to come back as George one day. God dang.
I haven't left since Wednesday when we did the Fletch Malone show.
Really? You look a little groggy. And it actually looks like quite a few bottles are missing back there. JB, how are you? You're just right across the street.
Doing good. I'm going to catch the Nate Bergazzi show tonight.
Oh, nice.
Austin, comedian. Nice. And for those who don't know, like, he's one of the biggest stars in comedy right now. And Lance had him on the forward, like, before anyone knew who he was, like, very early. So maybe go back through the catalog and listen to that. Before, it was probably 5 years ago. No, it was maybe before that.
Might even be more. Yeah. Yeah. Shout out to Nick Shuley for suggesting Nate Bergazzi. I was like, who's that? He's like, it's this comedian. So I watched a couple specials. Guy didn't say one cuss word.
No.
I'm like, I mean, think about it. You watch any comedian now, right? All the big ones. By the way, Nate Bargatze's sold out two nights at the Moody Center here in Austin. So that's, I don't know, 15,000 people a night. He's not going to say one bad word. How do you do that? I tried like hell on the show to like, could you just drop a dang or a damn or a shit or anything? No, I don't know why. Anyways, guy's gotten huge. But onto the reason we're here talking about cycling. But before we do, let's do a little bit of business. Today's show brought to you by Manscaped. This episode is brought to you by them. And did you know that one man every hour, every day is diagnosed with testicular cancer? My day was October 2nd, 1996. In fact, testicular cancer is the most common form of cancer amongst men aged 15 to 35. With April being National Testicular Awareness Month, our friends over at Manscaped have partnered with the Testicular Cancer Society to help spread awareness for men's health and early cancer detection. Visit manscaped.com/TCS to learn how to check yourself for early signs of cancer. And as always, you can use the promo code WEDO for 20% off plus free shipping at manscaped.com/TCS. And for you super fans, George is just finalizing his OnlyFans account where he is going to do some exclusive content for Manscaped. Right, George?
Yes, correct.
You better drink some more of that wine behind you.
I know.
That'd be fine. We'll just tell everybody. Also today brought to you by Element. It's getting that time of year. Although, JB, you know this. I mean, it's been starting to get hot as hell here. I was like, oh boy, here it comes. And now it's cool again. I walked out this morning. I was like, whoa. Anyways. This has to be the last little cool snap we have here in Austin. Right after this, it's going to be just, donut grease hot. And so what happens, me personally, y'all know, George makes fun of me all the time. I sweat like crazy, but I have found a solution. My solution is Element, right? This is my go-to hydration source, all of ours, in fact. 1,000 milligrams of sodium, 200 milligrams of potassium, 60 milligrams of magnesium, no sugar, no gluten, and no artificial ingredients. Our listeners get a free Element sample pack with any order when you head on over to drinklmnt, those are the letters, drinklmnt.com/WeDo. That sample pack includes all the flavors, so you can dial it all in. Head on over to drinklmnt.com/WeDo. Get your free sample pack. Also today brought to you by AG1, right? This is real simple. It's about taking control of your health. It should be simple, folks. That's why for the last, 7 years, I've been drinking AG1 every day, no exceptions. It is just one scoop mixed in water once a day, every day. And it makes me feel totally nourished and focused. I am a guy who does not, I don't do great. Well, although I must admit, y'all be proud of me. All right. I ate a tomato last night. I was just sitting there. I don't know. And I had those little cherry tomatoes. I actually thought of y'all. I saw that thing sitting there. I was like, I'm going to eat that tomato. It was damn good. Right. But other than that, I don't do a very good job. But just like with other things, I have found the hack, and it is AG1. Delivers my daily dose of vitamins, minerals, pre and probiotics, and more. It's a powerful, healthy habit that's also powerfully simple. Special offer for our listeners. Try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3 plus K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase exclusively at drinkag1.com/themove. That's drinkag1.com/themove. All right, let's go talk about Bike Racing. Liège Bastogne. By the way, I loved this race. Loved it. Always the bike race I always wanted to win. I thought I had it in a bag 2004. I will take all the blame for not winning that one, but we won't go down that rabbit hole. But it's been a year. If JB, you asked about this or touched on this in the pre-show. I mean, these classics so far, how many of these performances have we seen, right? You saw Pogacar do almost the same thing. And when I say same thing, I mean, he called it out and started going, hey guys, hey everybody, this, I'm going to go, he may as well just walked out there with a profile and said, this, I'm going to go right here. I'm going to attack right here. Anybody wants to come, just come along. I'm just letting you know I'm going there. He did the same thing today. Matthew Vanderpool did it 2 times. The only race that didn't happen in is Milan San Remo, just because it can't happen there, right? It's just not hilly enough or hard enough. This is unheard of. I mean, a lot of this stuff is unheard of. 7 wins out of 10 for a rider ever, 70% batting average, never happens. One single rider in any given race completely dominating, never happens. It's crazy.
Not only that, but we're seeing these guys coming out, no racing, with Vanderpool coming into San Remo, being a real important part of the team win there, then going on to dominate the classics, no racing behind his legs. And the same thing with Pogacar, basically took a month away from racing at altitude. I still don't understand how these guys are mimicking the race speeds. We understand they could do the, you know, the watts on the climbs and have all the power to weight ratio, really take care of their nutrition, all that stuff. But to mimic the race speed, I don't get it. And not only is he mimicking the race speed, but he's dropping everybody in the climb and then immediately putting time on the best riders in the world. As soon as he gets on top of the climb, just keeps going from 10 seconds to 30 seconds to a minute, and he's gone. Like they can't even do anything about it.
By the way, on La Redoute, he got out of the saddle to accelerate. I don't think he got out of the saddle the rest of the time. He just stayed in the saddle and rode his tempo. And you saw everybody else, like it was a sprint, trying to stay on his wheel. Hats off to Carapaz for making it across, but could not hold it. And he's just in the saddle, just riding a fast tempo. I mean, La Redoute, folks, they're pieces that are 15%.
Yeah.
It is so a very hard climb.
New record also on La Redoute, 8 seconds faster than last year, Remco Evenepoel. You know, cold weather. Okay, last year was also bad weather. But what I'm really impressed about is that, you know, he just goes so early on La Redoute. Normally, La Redoute is a climb. I mean, you've done it. It's a drag, and you wait until everybody's really tired, and then just after halfway or even just before the top, people go normally. But he goes really early. as you say, Lance, you know, it was kind of pre-announced. I listened to Matthias Kielmose. They asked him before the race, you know, what do you think is going to be the scenario? He says, well, you know, UAE is going to control, then Tadej is going to attack on La Redoute probably, and then we'll see how it goes. And that's what happened. And I was basically, from the moment he attacked, in my opinion, it was a race for second place. So Romain Bardet, hats off to him. I mean, he was, you know, the best of the rest. Did an amazing race. You know, it's nice to see him back at a really good level. But that level is, unfortunately, for the rest of the peloton, way behind Tadej Pogacar.
Yeah, and interestingly enough, Romain Bardet just came off of Tour d'Alpes, which he was very strong there, had a day off. Race finished on Friday, one day off, and then races Liège, Bastogne-Liège. It's incredible the recovery, you know, these guys have. And Romain Bardet is not a young rider anymore. He's 33 years old. So perhaps somebody like that needs that sort of intensity, that sort of race intensity before a big race like this. But one day off, I mean, it's incredible.
That's so old school. He is. Yeah. I mean, for this peloton, he's like a grandpa out there. That's an old school approach.
Yeah.
I'm curious, this is more for Johan. As I was watching the race, I was watching all the Belgian fans, and I'm like, what do they think of Pogacar? Because when you look at the history of this race, Belgian riders have won 61 times. Second is 12 wins for Italy. Like, it's just remarkable. So, and I, you know, nobody knows cycling more than Belgians in general. So I have to think they appreciate what they're seeing. Like, they know they're witnessing greatness. Are they warming up to him, or have they?
I think so. I mean, I think it's difficult to, you know, not like Pogacar, and they really appreciate a performance like today. I mean, obviously it also helps that the big Belgian favorite for this race, Remco, was not present. You know, if it's a two-way battle, then of course all the cheering would have been for Remco, but they would still have cheered on Pogacar. I think the Belgian cycling fans love a good show, and you know, last year he crashed out. Pogacar broke his wrist there, and you know, had to basically do a race against the clock to get ready for the Tour. So now coming back, wanting that revenge. I think the fans have really appreciated that.
I think so. I mean, these folks, to your point, JB, I mean, they're not just standing on the side of the road just because the race passes their house. And these folks, these are right. these are fanatical fans. And they know the story. They know that what happened to him and how his Tour played out after that. And for him to not just come back and target this race, but to also keep in mind, skip the Tour of Flanders, which we've spent a lot of time talking about, right? So for Belgian fans, this was their shot to see him. I do think he's turning out to be, look at the stats. I mean, you just can't, you can't deny this is going to, if not already, one of the best people to ever throw their leg over a bike. It just is, yeah. Right? 70% win percentages here, second biggest margin of victory in Liège, Bastogne-Liège in the last 44 years. And if you're him, boy, you're looking around going, okay, my next goal, of course he's doing the Giro. I think he can phone that one in, essentially. Right? He's thinking about the Tour. He needs to win another Tour, but he's going, Vingegaard just got out of the hospital. Remco's banged up. Roglic, we'll see. He's sitting there going, man, just stay upright. And I got this. Now the roles are reversed, right? He was the one, to your point, Johan, of playing catch up and trying to get ready for the Tour. Now all his rivals a lot of his rivals are doing the same thing. He's sitting pretty.
What do you guys think? What do you guys think about George? What do you think, like a guy like Vingegaard? So we know Vingegaard is the most affected of that crash in the Basque Country. Do you think Vingegaard, we're going to see him at the start of the Tour?
I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say. If he's just got out of the hospital on Monday, less than a week ago, you got to assume it's going to be another 6 weeks before he's properly riding again. I think it's going to be next to impossible to see him racing at his level, the Tour, but you know, maybe he starts the Tour. But I think we're also going to see a lot of different strategies taking place with teams like UAE. Now they have the clear favorite for the Tour de France, for the Giro d'Italia. And you even saw it today. Pogacar said, look, we started riding early on really fast. One, because we wanted to stay warm. Two, because we wanted to stay safe. These teams have so much to lose now that all these other guys are gone that I think many times we're going to see them racing just to keep Pogacar safe and worrying about the results later. Like in Giro, we all know how dangerous that race is. We all know the things that can happen, especially in the first week. These guys have so much to lose that if I'm a UAE domestique right now, I'm like, oh man, this is going to be a really tough next few months for me.
Well, and if you're ASO, right, you're sitting here going, please, please stay upright. You have to imagine a tour. Yeah. Let's not get ahead of ourselves, but
they're calling and checking on him every day. How are you?
I say it all the time. Sports are built and explode because of stars, and the stars are the athletes, and they have to be sitting there going, all right, Vingegaard may not be there. Who knows on Remco? I mean, you got to have these guys. Then all of a sudden you got Roman Bardet's on the 4-star list to try to win the tour. Come on.
I'm going to give an unpopular opinion.
Nothing new here. Go ahead. You give a lot of contra. And I don't know if they're unpopular, but they're certainly edgy, which is what we love.
Well, no, I mean, it's just looking. I mean, we all know that the Tour de France is the biggest race. It's the only race that counts once you are at the level of Pogacar. If he wins the Giro, okay, it's nice for him. Everybody expects him to win the Tour. He has to win the Tour now. The team needs to. I'm not going to the Giro. In this situation, I am not going. If I'm the team manager, I'm saying, okay, we change the program, all our eggs in one basket. We play it safe. We focus on the Tour. From now on, okay, you've won these races. Now you take a little bit of rest and you have a traditional build up to the Tour, like Vingegaard would have done. You put all the chances that you can, the controllables on your side. He's not going to do that because the guy likes the race. And I think it's a guy who wants to check off boxes. He wants to win the Giro.
And is the team going to reimburse him for that fat appearance fee that the Giro gave him?
Okay. Yeah, little detail.
Yeah, a little. It's got a lot of zeros behind it. It might be little, but it's got a whole lot of zeros behind it.
Yeah.
No, that ain't happening.
Pogacar. Yeah, I agree
for
with
a new
you.
Car with that money.
I agree with you, Johan. You were right in saying that. Just go for all the eggs in the one basket for the Tour de France. We all know how dangerous racing is these days. And then you throw in a grand tour, you throw in guys that have nothing to lose, smaller teams, especially in the first week of the grand tour. It's a big risk. It's a big risk for him to take when he's got such a big opportunity ahead of him.
That's interesting. You guys, if you go back 3-4 years, you know, after Pogacar won the first and then definitely the second, you guys had these same question marks when he's had all these other ambitions for one day races. You were like, what are you doing? You guys were just like boggled that he wouldn't put everything in for the tour. Now, 3 years later, reflecting on it, it seems like you still feel the same way. Like he's not putting enough emphasis on the tour.
I think, you know, for Pogacar, there's only one thing that they will judge him on is whether he wins or not the tour. Everything else. And so, and this is another debate. We could do a whole show about this, but, you know, I mean, we have to acknowledge that there are a lot of crashes in today's cycling, more and more. You know, they go faster, the bikes are lighter, stiffer, the disc brakes break better, whatever. You know, the behavior within the peloton has changed. There are a lot of crashes. And, you know, it's just a matter of, you know, it's not always, you don't have it under control. So just show up for the things that matter. And I would skip the Giro.
And I would add to that, Johan, these guys, all of them, to a man, are just that much. They're just not even that much. They're so much skinnier. These guys don't have a whole lot to.
Yeah.
They almost get hurt when they don't crash. Like they look fragile. I mean, yeah. They're trying to be as lean as they possibly can be and maximize watts per kilo. But boy, these guys can't take the crashes. No. And some of these crashes, it doesn't matter. You could be 20 pounds heavier. You're still going to break something. But I mean, we saw with Skelmos, right? I mean, look how skinny that guy is. You saw what happened to him in Flesh Alone. That looked like something out of a war. I mean, as frozen as he was, that dude, I have never seen anybody ever in any scenario climbing Everest, hiking to the North Pole. I've never seen anyone that cold ever my entire life. Like it's not funny, but he couldn't walk. Excuse me, his mechanic, like he was a 3-year-old, had to carry him to the car. Legit. Yeah. Folks, if you haven't seen it, go on whatever these social things, you know, the whatever, the tick, the all that stuff. You'll see it. The dude looked like he was dying, right? That's all these, man, there is just not a lot of reserves there. And when, if you're going to hit the deck, anyways.
You know, it's interesting you're saying that, because I remember, maybe 4 years ago on the show, we got into a pretty heavy discussion about how much quicker they can heal from fractures and bones with modern medicine, go right into surgery. And then, but now you're saying they're more frail, which is really interesting.
Well, that's one of them is before the accident and the other is after the accident. So yes. I mean, I guess the good news is there is some technology that speeds up healing, but
man,
you gotta stay on the bike.
I think when we commented on Strada Bianca, I asked both of you guys, don't you have the impression that, because it was the first time we saw Pogacar again racing, he's obviously on a different level than last year. And I said, don't you think that he looks leaner, skinnier? After seeing him today, I'm going to confirm he definitely looks skinnier and leaner than in the past.
I'm surprised you haven't actually confirmed that.
Well, I mean, I'm confirming it now.
Oh, with some scoop or you're just...
No, just
visual.
Me thinking that, saying what I see, but...
And Johan, didn't you say last year he didn't do many altitude camps and now he is doing them? Is that another difference?
He did none last year. He did none.
Yeah.
He just comes back from altitude now.
Yeah.
So obviously he's not going to go anymore. He's probably going to do another one between the Giro and the Tour.
Yeah. So,
I mean, the scary thing about Pogacar is that I have the impression that he's still improving. He's still on the upward curve in terms of his progression, which is unbelievable.
Yeah, well, there's only one thing that could prevent that from continuing, and that's an accident. So to your point, I think you bring up a good point. I don't know if it's an unpopular one, Johan. It's a good point. And we all know this. You guys been around a lot more than me. I tell you, I did that race one time. I said, shit. And I got a bag. All right. I got paper.
Yeah.
For doing that. And I was like, man, y'all want this back? I want to go home. Fuck this.
Yeah,
that is sketch balls racing, dude. It is. I'm like, I'll pay you more.
One year I did the Giro. We finished in a mass sprint, 200 riders right into the line. Like, it was a safe finish. It was straight. It started raining. Well, somebody decided to like pour soap right after the finish line. Oh, yeah. And I think about 80 of us just slid across the line. Like as soon as you tap the brakes to slow down, not to run into people, we're all on the ground. And it was stuff like that happens in the Giro all the time.
Let's do a little bit of business too, before we continue on. I know you got some questions from some listeners. And then I still want to ask you this question about Belgium, Johan. Today's show also brought to you by Caldera Lab. We all know first impressions matter. If you're not taking care of your skin, that's going to be the first thing someone notices and instantly either thinks you're way older or you just don't care about your appearance. Show them that you do and make a great first impression with Caldera Lab. They create high performance men's skincare products and the regimen leads off their product lineup, a twice a day routine to transform your skin. Just for our audience, we have an exclusive offer. This is their best offer available anywhere. Use the code WEDO at calderalab.com and you get 20% off. And that use that code WEDO at calderalab.com gets you 20% off. And then just go, I don't know, walk outside and make a good first impression. Last one of the day brought to you by HVMN. We often hear that fasting and exercise are good for the brain. HVMN launched the world's first drinkable ketone in 2017. Ketone IQ is their latest innovation on ketones with improved effectiveness, taste, and cost. Ketone IQ delivers clean fuel that can cross the blood-brain barrier, supplying your brain and body sustained energy, focus, and sharpness, putting you in flow, lasting for hours. You can save 30% off your first subscription order of Ketone IQ at hvmn.com/themove. Again, the letters HVMN.com/the move. By the way, I get asked about HVMN or Ketone IQ on a daily basis. It's crazy. I love it. And for all you people that think about asking me the question tomorrow, does it work? Don't call me, because I'm going to tell you right now, it works. I love it. Johan, real quick, just humor me here. Because I remember when I would when I first went down there to that part of Belgium, like Liège, and I'm like, what's the big deal? We're like, oh shit, this is different. Like, you go from Flanders and Tour Flanders and Het Volk and all these races, and then you go down there, like, dude, this is different. A different language, looks different, feels different, people are different, same country. I was always like, not always, but at first I was like, well, this is really weird. You basically have two parts of Belgium. I don't know if everybody knows that.
Mm, yeah.
Right? Well, you have the Flemish and the Walloons.
Yeah. So, you know, Belgium is a small country. From the two furthest points is only 300 kilometers, the whole country. So, but we still managed to have it split up in several parts, three parts, actually. One tiny, tiny little part is German, but that's, you know, irrelevant. But yeah, so Liège is in Wallonia.
Sorry, Germany.
Liège is in Wallonia, so the southern part of Belgium, which borders with France. They speak Walloon, which is French. The northern part, which borders with Holland, speak Flemish, which is the same language as Dutch. And I think it's also a big difference in the scenery. You know, the Ardennes are obviously a lot harder. It's hilly. Flanders is mostly flat. And the people are different.
They are different.
Although I think that on a race like Liège-Bastogne-Liège, there are a lot. I mean, it's basically Belgian cycling fans. A lot of people just travel to Liège, also Flemish guys, to go watch the race.
But it's not the same passion as Flanders. You see it. No. I mean, I don't want to criticize the Walloons or that part of Belgium, but it doesn't take a genius. You just watch both races. And of course, the way that the Tour of Flanders has been reimagined and reinvented and really made spectator friendly is cool. But this is a different sort of fanaticism when it comes to the world of cycling compares to cycling fans in Flanders. Like, they're just nuts.
Yeah, that's true.
No, you have, so same have country, right? So you could say, oh, Belgian. No, it's yes, same country, but it's a different fan base. And you see it. You see it on the side. Look at the finish, right? That's a very different vibe than what you would see even in, again, Wevelgem and an E3 and all these other races. Those races pull bigger crowds than Liège-Bastogne-Liège.
For sure.
Yeah. But that's because of the fans that all live in this little small pocket of Belgium.
Yeah. And then also today, especially today also, let's not forget, you know, it was the weather was not great. You know, it's between 7 and 10 degrees. You need to be a real cycling fan to go out. You know, it's not very pleasant to stand there for hours in the cold, because it was cold. It was cold. It didn't rain, but it was cold today. Mm.
Not only that, I mean, we all know Flanders, the most iconic climbs are all within a 30-mile radius, so it's really easy for the fans to just see several sections. And that the organizers, your friend at the Tour of Flanders, has done a great job in setting up a lot of bougie VIP areas on the Quermont, where it becomes a really high-end party. And they've done a great job in making it a much more spectator-friendly race.
Boy, that was something. I mean, for you to call something bougie.
Oh, it was bougie. We were talking about it last night.
Did anybody else catch that? I mean, if anybody on this show knows bougie, it's this motherfucker right here. And for you to call that, your friend with the bougie spectator areas. But fucking George was just bowed up there like this. Yeah, these are my people right here. Jizzy, champagne.
I actually enjoyed watching it more than I enjoyed watching Roubaix. Johan, would you
agree? Heaters out there.
Yeah. Flanders, you mean, or
yes, but like last year we did Flanders, this year we did Roubaix. I loved riding the cobbles. That was great. I haven't done that. I've never watched Roubaix as a fan, so that was fun. But if I were to choose as a spectator, I'd go back to Flanders.
George, we've been to both. We've been to Flanders last year. I think the atmosphere is contagious. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's completely different. It's completely different. But anyway, we're talking about Liège, so we don't have that atmosphere there for sure.
This is the kind of stuff you talk about when somebody wins by 2 minutes.
Yeah, okay.
It just is. By the way, the women's race, that show's coming up right after this. Now, that was a race. That was a very exciting race. So I, as soon as we all hang up, and I'm going to go do that one, I kind of can't wait. That was an actual race.
Yeah, I recommend our listeners go watch the, at least watch the, you know, the last 30K of that race unfold. Amazing. And then catch the show with Lance, Sally, and Mari. Good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we should also point out that it was great to see Bernal having some strength there at the end of the race. We haven't seen him after 200 kilometers. So we see him on his comeback. I think it's great to see him up there. Pidcock, unfortunately, got stuck some bad luck, although it probably would not have been able to go with Pogacar when he went. And Vanderpool, I mean, three groups back at one point, chase for 30K and still pulls out a podium. Super impressive ride by him.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's the other thing I wanted to talk about, you know, because before the race, we were talking about Pogacar, and then perhaps if he had an incredible day, Mathieu van der Poel. I mean, realistically, we have to say, you know, it was never going to happen. You know, it's a guy of 75 kilos with in a race of 4,500 meters of elevation. It's super difficult. But I have an interesting stat here. In the last 15 years, there's only two people of 70 kilos and more who finished on the podium of Liège Bastogne Liège.
In the last how many years?
In the last 15 years.
Two people. Who was the other one?
Mathieu van der Poel and Wout van Aert.
Wout van Aert.
And another interesting stat.
I finished on the podium and I weighed that much.
Yeah, but that's more than 15 years ago.
I know, but I just come on, man.
That's how old we are.
Look, I didn't get hugged enough when I grew up. Come on, man. Just give me some love, dude.
Yeah. The last three riders who finished on the podium of Paris-Roubaix and Liège-Bastogne-Liège are Mathieu van der Poel this year, Wout van Aert 2 years ago, and 1986, Adrie van der Poel.
Yeah, I knew his name had to be in there. Yep.
Mathieu's dad.
Yeah.
Good genetics.
Yeah.
There was one other thing of interest you guys brought up about today's race is the, you know, the gentleman's agreement after a crash. Hmm. And Israel Premier Tech got on the front after that crash and started driving. And, but a 1 day race is very different from a stage race where there's, you know, much more of an establishment in the leadership. So what were your thoughts on that? We'll start with you on that one, Johan.
Okay. Well, you know, there were two crashes very close to each other with about 100K to go. So still quite far away from La Redoute, which normally the Côte de La Redoute is identified as the breaking point of the race. And the way the race was developing, I think everybody in the peloton knew that that's what was going to happen. So we had Van der Poel and Pidcock involved in both of those crashes. They were not severely, you know, they didn't really crash, but they were held up and behind. And we saw that Israel Premier Tech, a bit surprising, I would say, because, you know, they didn't have the big favorite. You know, it's okay, they had Stevie Williams, who won Flèche Wallonne. They had Dylan Teuns, who was their leader for today. But they went to the front, like, straight away. They will say, okay, that was our plan. We wanted to be in front. UAE joined them straight after that, and it took a lot of effort of Van der Poel and Pidcock to come back. And I think the question is, you know, can you do that? I mean, yeah, I think you can. It's part of a race, you know. It's crashes, and especially when their races happen. And those agreements, I think, are more valid in Grand Tours when one of the leaders crashes. And still, if it's when the race is going on already and there's a crucial point where everybody wants to be in the front, they're also not going to wait. And in today's cycling, even less, no? But I found it quite early to just a bit 100K to go to say, like, Israel Premier Tech, okay, we go to the front and we put the pace here. They finally made it back, but I think it took a lot out of Pidcock and Van der Poel, that pursuit.
Well, that's, if you believe... I mean, we've heard from this or heard from Mark Cavendish a lot about this, that there is no more respect or etiquette. So you say it's allowed to happen. Well, it could happen at any point in a bike race. As soon as they say go, you go to the finish line. So I think a lot of that's been thrown out, but those guys, very narrow road, too far in the back. I mean, with, there was talk of people taking off, and of course would road furniture, traffic furniture played a factor again. But it wouldn't have changed the outcome of the race.
No, I agree. And it's like you said, you're on very fast, very narrow roads, and the guys, perhaps they started pulling a bit early, but there are other choices. Okay, let's wait for these 100 guys that crash. And then you think those 100 guys, once they come back, they're going to give them leeway for positioning. No, this race is all about positioning all day long. Always have to be paying attention. So if you happen to be misfortunate enough to get behind that crash, these guys are not going to wait for you to get back in there to fight with more people for positioning. They're happy to, you know, have their guy fight with half the peloton as opposed to full peloton.
You know, the other interesting thing, I, because you, when you mentioned, and I agree with you that La Redoute is really, it, I mean, if Tadej Pogacar stands on the start line this morning, which effectively he did, and said, guys, this is where I'm going to attack. That hasn't always been the case. If I remember correctly, back in our time, Johan, the stucco was sort of, and even in Merckx's time, I mean, there is a statue of Eddie Merckx on top of the stucco, because that is the climb that he always used to attack, to win Liège-Bastogne-Liège. It's a lot earlier than La Redoute. I mean, by the time we went stucco, Haute-Livre, and then you finally eventually get to La Redoute. But back then, I mean, people thought, if I can get over the stucco, I might make it. I mean, it's exactly. And that's all, it's a lot earlier.
Yeah. And today, I mean, I think everybody was also, nobody wanted to try anything because they all knew that Pogacar was gonna, you know, his team already. I think, you know, another thing that I want to point out is, okay, Pogacar is the big favorite for a race like this, but his team was incredibly strong. I mean, to control a race with a single team, like they basically did, you have to have strong riders. Today, for me, the guy, the best Gregario in the race was this, what's this called? Damon Novak. That guy was unbelievable. I mean, he was so strong. I mean, people probably haven't picked up on it, but, you know, he was pulling very fast. People were getting dropped on the Haute-Levée already. And then, you know, he got dropped. He came back. He started pulling again. And he was still basically there until the bottom of the La Redoute. He was very strong.
JB, you got some questions before we bounce?
I do. I have a couple of interesting
comments.
One for you and one for George. This first one is from a friend of mine, Paula. And I think George knows Paula, but she wrote to me yesterday and said, a very close riding buddy of mine, Colin, is battling cancer again. He is a beast. And you guys met him at the Hincapie Fondo. He's been battling since he was 44. He is now 58. And he has tumors everywhere. He keeps it to himself, shares stuff with me. It just sucks, but he rides every day. And he's very determined. His goal last year before he got sick again was to ride the Greenville Hincapie Fondo sub 5 hours. The year before, he did it in 5 hours, 10. He's just a solid guy. You think Lance could give him a shout out? He's quietly fighting the fight, and who knows, he might just keep on trucking.
Absolutely. So
that's Colin.
Yeah. Hang in there. That sucks. I agree with your friend. That totally sucks. It also kind of sucks that your time at the Hincapie Fondo is probably better than mine. you know what I mean? But we're thinking about you, pulling for you, Colin Strong all the way. Don't give up, dude.
A couple photos for those watching on YouTube from the Fondo. So anyway, and then here's another one. This is for George. This was kind of fun. We were talking about the horrible weather last on Wednesday, but this is from Bryce. I listened to the recent podcast on Flesh Wallonne and enjoyed the section you guys recalling the worst days on the bike. When George started talking, I knew exactly what race and day he was describing. I was there racing with him in the 2008 Tour of California. I was racing with Jelly Belly, and on that miserable day, actually worked with George to bridge across to the break. Please ask George if he remembers the tall rider, I'm 6'6", who bumped the motorbike and did a 360 on the bike in the middle of the road due to the high winds while we were bridging. Unfortunately, I was one of the riders dropped with at 20 K from hypothermia. Also asked George if he remembers the bet that we made during that race. I offered a box of Jelly Belly sports beans in exchange for an autographed jersey. My memory is that I held up my end of the deal, still waiting on his side.
Oh, gee.
Oh. And it's good. Wow. In all seriousness, I still own the bike shop I started while racing as a pro and now have several other locations, and we'd be honored to put a George jersey on display. That's Mead's Bike Shop. He's in the Midwest, Sterling, Illinois. So I think that Quad Cities area. Hmm.
Great. Yeah, two things for sure. We'll send him a jersey. I'll send him one of the Move jerseys next week. Give me the address. And I do remember because the wind in that particular day was some of the strongest winds I've ever dealt with. Like, we'd come around corners and you'd feel like you ran into a wall. The wind was that strong. And I do remember that rider getting pushed so hard that he had to turn in the middle of the road. It was that intense. It was not like anything I'd ever seen in my career. And that day still stands out. So I appreciate him reminding me of that wind.
And one more very important thing here.
I'll send a jersey too. Never mind.
Yeah, you should.
I'll send the address to both of you guys. But and then one more very important thing here. We're, you know, obviously for years have been partners with Ventum. We're all riding Ventums, love them. They're NS1, they're GS1. We're giving away an NS1 at the end of the Giro, and you have time to register for that. It doesn't cost you anything to go in, register. If you haven't done it yet, get it in. Go to ventumracing.com/themove, but put a dash in there, the-move. ventumracing.com/themove for your chance to win a brand new NS1.
Cool. All right, everybody, thanks for tuning in. And then if you got another 30 minutes or so, hop on over to the women's show. Exciting race there. Hell of a win by Grace Brown. Got a soft spot in my heart for Grace. I have a daughter, Grace, so. Hell of a win. So, all right. Y'all have a good weekend.